there's power, there is power in a band of working men. When they stand, hand in hand, that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand, one industrial union grand.
Hello, fellow listeners. You are listening to KTAH 101.9 FM, low powered, and you are listening to the Wobbly Radio Hour. And around the table, we have just three of our members today. We have me, Marilyn, and I'm she, they. We have Lynn.
Lynn, she.
And we have fellow worker Noah over here. He, him.
The Wobbly Radio Hour is a production of the Tacoma branch of the IWW, which is the Industrial Workers of the World. For those of you that think that we are an artifact of the past, not true. We are alive and well and growing. The Industrial Workers of the World were founded in 1905. It is the only union that I know that is worldwide. We have members all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we organize industrially. What that means is that along a particular occupation, like all people that work for the airlines would be in the union together. You don't separate the pilots out from the stewards and stewardesses.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for all different kinds of businesses.
Right. We're one big union. We organize across all different trades and across all different positions. If you are a worker, you are a friend to us.
And not all workers work outside the home. Some workers are in the home. Some workers are working to raise their families. You are all welcome.
Mm-hmm.
All are welcome except for managerial positions with the power to hire and fire.
Yep.
And then we also don't believe that police are a regular union. We feel like they're a guild.
Absolutely. And the third group that we don't organize is any political officers or political candidates as well. So if you're an officer of a political party, you can't organize with us. Basically, the IWW believes that we should not be endorsing candidates or parties. We currently do not see any legitimate working class representation in the system of politics as it currently stands, and we want to help organize our workers outside of that circle. We want to work with people one-on-one, face-to-face, for the sake of organizing labor, and we just don't see a legitimate political avenue to do that. So those are the three groups that we don't organize.
So take it away, Noah.
Alrighty. So I will be reading to you the preamble of the Industrial Workers of the World, or at least a few excerpts to help you get a better picture of who we are. The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, the struggle must go on, until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the means of production, abolish the wage system, and live in harmony with the earth. Instead of the conservative motto, a fair day's wage for a fair day's work, we must inscribe on our banner the revolutionary watchword, abolition of the wage system. So that's who we are as a labor union. Now, here we will also have our lovely little Wobble Radio tradition of singing to you a song from the Little Red Songbook, which is a very popular publication in our institution, and we are going to be singing The Preacher and the Slave.
Long-haired preachers come out every night, try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices so sweet. You will eat by and by, in that glorious land above the sky, way up high, work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die, that's a lie. The starvation army they play, and they sing and they clap and they pray, till they get all your coin on the drum, Then they'll tell you when you're on the bomb. You will leave by and by, in that glorious land above the sky, way up high, work and pray, live on hay, you'll be high in the sky when you die, that's a lie. Holy rollers and jumpers come out, they holler, they jump and they shout. Give your money to Jesus, they say. He will cure all diseases today. You will leave by and by, in that glorious land above the sky. Work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die.
That's a lie.
Working folk of all countries unite. Side by side, we for freedom will fight. When the world and its wealth we have gained, to the grafters we'll sing this refrain. Oh, you will be, by and by, when you learn how to cook and how to fry, chop some wood to you good, and you'll eat in that sweet by and by, that's no lie.
All right. And now to lead in with today's labor news. Unfortunately, fellow worker Gordon, who usually does this section, could not be with us today. We send all of our love and support to him. So the first thing that I think is a very interesting and kind of humorous story coming out of Seattle. As we all know, the Starbucks Workers Union is currently fighting to organize multiple different Starbucks locations all across the country. Many of these people who have to work in the drive-thrus or making coffee or just taking care of these locations in general have many different issues with their relationships with management, unsafe working environments, and as always, making sure that they get paid well so that they can work to live, not live to work, essentially. However, at a recent Starbucks organizing rally in Seattle, one very interesting character decided to come out and speak. They were they had been trying to organize one of their Starbucks locations, and unfortunately, he was pulled aside by his manager after they and several of their coworkers walked out in protest of unsafe working conditions. He was pulled aside by his manager the next day. His manager said that he was specifically fired for disruptive and hostile behavior, which, of course, we think is a bogus claim. You know, walking out of your workplace because you're living and working in an unsafe environment, I don't think should be punishable at all. But unfortunately, that's the opinion of management, not the opinion of the workers. Now, this individual showed up to the Starbucks Workers Union rally in Seattle a little while back. And the interesting thing you need to know is that this person is a furry. So they showed up to this rally in like a full, I think it's like an Arctic fox slash husky kind of like outfit with like the furry arms and the claws and like the big, almost like mascot like head with the blue nose. And they basically spoke at length about their experience at Starbucks. And, you know, you think, wow, that's a very interesting character to kind of, you know, let them take the bullhorn. Apparently he asked the organizers of that rally beforehand, hey, is it all right if I come up and, you know, speak and talk about my experience, because I want to wear this suit because it makes it easier to deal with like social anxiety and also to kind of like give a cuddlier face to what is a very serious problem. Maybe it'll relate to people a little bit more. And the organizers thought it was a great idea. And overnight, this person who goes by Michael Vestigo, as he was an Overland Park Starbucks employee.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is where?
Yeah, at Overland Park. So he's actually gained quite a bit of notoriety overnight for coming out to this rally and talking about it. Vice did a whole interview with him, funny enough. And so it basically explains his whole story about how he got fired. And funny enough, his location actually won their union vote a week later. This was a Starbucks location, I should also add. It was in Kansas City. So he came all the way out to Seattle to this big rally to talk about his work experience. And a lot of people within the Starbucks Workers Union have been kind of like, wow, this is a really interesting character. And now they're just kind of like this unofficial mascot going from location to location with a Union Yes sign and their Starbucks apron on with the name tag and everything.
Nice for Union!
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, I just think that that's a really, you know, hopeful and optimistic story. And as they said themselves, you know, this kind of normalizes the fact that workers of all different types suffer under the system that we currently do, that they all deserve union representation, you know, no matter what their interests are outside of the workplace. And, you know, I think this is a very interesting way of humanizing the people who have to work in sometimes unfair or unsafe work environments. So all of our love and care towards Michael. Hope you're doing great out there, and keep up that furry stuff, because you're really helping those workers right now, and you're really helping humanize the face of people trying to organize. The other quick organizing story I figured I'd share with you, just kind of an update on the Amazon Labor Union. Unfortunately, a little while back, they faced a loss at their Staten Island location. According to the New York Times, their vote failed, unfortunately. It was 380 votes for the union and 618 against. And this warehouse employs about 1,600 workers, which is really kind of a shame, because you think that on such an important vote, they would have had more turnout.
Well, apparently money talks.
Yes,
and
it does.
The management put a ton of money into beating this vote.
That was on news
everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a very interesting setback because, as many of us are aware, the Amazon Labor Union organized a larger warehouse near that same location around Staten Island with more employees, and they actually won. They won by a narrow margin in terms of votes, but they won that union, thankfully. So this is a very interesting setback, and it's really asked the union to kind of consider, you know, what's the strategy going forward? Because you have to understand, this is one of the biggest shipping and processing companies on Earth. They have a monopoly on it.
I think it is the biggest, isn't it?
And probably, yeah. I mean, even just in terms of wealth alone, it's a company that's worth, you know, probably close to hundreds of billions of dollars now. So, you know.
Isn't it illegal for companies to spend money and to try to intimidate the workers from unionizing?
Not at all. No. Captive audience meetings, anti-union propaganda, and things like that are not really punished, because I think the legal justification is, you know, a business still has a First Amendment right, even though it isn't an individual. And current labor law really sides more with employers more than it does workers. So they really do have the advantage, unfortunately, in many situations. And this happens to small businesses too, especially. Mm-hmm. Even when smaller locations or businesses try to organize, the employer has all the benefit. It's their home turf. So, I think this is a very interesting moment.
But they did decide, in the case of, I think it was Toyota workers, mm-hmm. that for the employer to put the voting box outside the what did they do? That hanky-panky with the voting box where they could watch people going to vote?
Yeah.
That was illegal.
Yes, it was. But unfortunately, in many of these illegal incidents, the bosses are happy to get away with it all the time. Now, while there haven't been any official inquiries in this instance to the National Labor Relations Board, the NLRB, to investigate if anything illegal has occurred, many businesses, unfortunately, do get away with illegal actions when it comes to union busting. So we just want to give all of our love and support towards, you know, our Amazon brothers and sisters and all betwixt who are trying to organize their workplace with the Amazon Labor Union at this moment. And we certainly hope that whatever actions come forward will be able to address the boss's end of the fight and, you know, continue to unionize Amazon locations around the country. So that is the conclusion of our labor section. And now for our first roundtable discussion. And this is going to be a bit of a doozy because, as we all know, this has been kind of a headline grabber over the past couple of weeks. We wanted to first talk about, in our roundtable, the Supreme Court's upcoming decision regarding a specific law trying to be passed by the Mississippi legislature regarding abortion restrictions, and how that judgment is going to ultimately overthrow Roe v. Wade. This is a very concerning issue for the majority of Americans. And the majority of Americans are absolutely, in favor of a woman's right to choose what she does with her own body, is even including the issue of abortion as well. You know, and I mean, it's a very overwhelming topic, because I think even though there are a lot of protests and a lot of organizing going on right now about it, I think something that we should also consider is the labor relations aspect of this as well. I think it's very important that if you are part of a unionized workplace or not, you should be doing everything in your power to make sure that, first of all, that your employer provides healthcare. And secondly, that that healthcare covers things like reproductive choice, birth control, gender-affirming hormone therapy, things like that for vulnerable individuals. Because this upcoming Supreme Court ruling could put a lot of people in jeopardy.
Okay, so Noah, I've been biting my tongue, waiting for you to wind that up. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Damn
so
right.
you all already know, without a doubt, if you're conscious at all and not in a coma, that there was a leaked document from the Supreme Court that was kind of a trial balloon with a 6-3 decision pending, hasn't been finalized yet. Most of the language was Alito's language,
mm-hmm.
and finding ways to get rid of Roe v. Wade, to state that there was a mistake made, it's the quotes there, a mistake was made when Roe v. Wade was affirmed. So people all over the country, as Noah has said, are very angry and worried and concerned. So the first thing that happened in Tacoma here is, along with cities all over the country, on May Day, there were rallies and demonstrations and marches. And there was a very sizable rally held at the federal courthouse here in Tacoma. It was well attended. That one was organized by Indivisible.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been rallies and demonstrations and marches every week. The last two have been primarily organized by the Tacoma DSA, Democratic Socialists. And these will be ongoing every Saturday at 1212 Pacific Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
That is the federal courthouse. And mostly they've started at 11 or 12. I'll find out what other times that they're coming up.
Absolutely. We can post that information about upcoming pro-choice protests coming up on the WOB Radio Hour Facebook page.
Right. Now, I have something I want to add, because the IWW, aside from being a strict labor union, also believes in the following human rights. So the right to medical care, the right to secure housing, and the right to a clean, livable planet. All of these things are intersectional as far as human needs go. And so there's also a push right now to get enough signatures for Initiative I-1471. That is universal health care for Washington State, otherwise known as Whole Washington. And of course, that would cover treatment for reproductive rights, for gender confirming rights, mm-hmm. and treatment. So all of these things, you know, we're not in silos. We're all working together toward the same thing,
mm-hmm.
which is human rights.
Emancipation. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
For, you know, workers and everybody who has to work under this current socioeconomic model, who has to put up with, you know, potential rulings like this in the hands of powerful people who, in many instances, we can't really influence a whole lot, because whoever funds them or puts them into those positions are ultimately the deciders of most of our fates.
Well, real change comes from the bottom.
That's absolutely right. We've always believed here in the IWW that a grassroots labor union such as ours can really help motivate workers to see themselves as a class and organize, so that we can address these very intersectional, very deeply rooted systemic problems in our society.
Yeah.
And, you know, the right to choose what you can do, or specifically to have your own autonomy over your own body is so very important, because if somebody else can control your body except for you, then what other rights do you really have?
Right.
It all starts from there.
Go ahead, Nate.
There's such a labor shortage now, partly because of the poor conditions of most employers. Women quitting now, having to have babies, no matter their circumstances, it's going to just jeopardize that whole thing of enough workers to fill the jobs. What if all of these women that hold administrative and high-level jobs of any type are having to leave their jobs because they're pregnant?
Mm-hmm.
How is society going to deal with that? And just people having babies just on purpose as a statement.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe actually one of the Supreme Court justices in her statement, it's the young woman that Trump appointed. I'm forgetting her name. But she specifically made a statement saying that the birth rates of this country have been declining for some time, and we might eventually run into a situation in the future where there's a worker shortage, which is a very perverse thing to say of like, I mean, that's almost blatantly saying we need more women to be broodmares because otherwise the economy will suffer.
And commodities.
And is that really a pro-life statement to just raise children so that somebody else can make more money and so that the values of their shares and their stocks can go up? Like, is that really the long-term plan of the pro-life movement? Because in that case, that's not pro-life. That's just pro-capitalism. And what has capitalism ever created? In terms of life, it destroys, it inherently robs people of their value, it robs people of their own autonomy, and it robs people of their ability to have a life where they work, not a work that takes up their entire life. So, and specifically when it comes to...
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was specifically when it comes to this issue, I mean...
So if you're not in a coma and you're hearing this program, get off of your butt and get involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you see any women walking around wearing red cloaks and white bonnets, it's unfortunately too late. But for now, while we still have time to organize,
well, Amy
and fight,
Barrett actually called herself a handmaiden.
Yes,
waiting for her church.
That was actually that was the Supreme Court justice that I was quoting earlier.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me her name. But she specifically said part of this a major issue of this pro-life movement is making sure that the economy can be sustained through surplus labor. That's paraphrasing what she said, but I mean, think about that.
Got to breed those workers.
Yeah, I know. I've got to make sure that there's a large, you know, poor class of the country. Otherwise, how is the middle class going to sweat? You know? Yeah. So please, by all means. No matter who you vote for, please just remember that people in this country have a right. Women, men, and all betwixt have a right to choose what they do with their body. No matter what your gender is, this will affect you, because there are also trans men or gender non-conforming or non-binary people who are going to be affected by this decision as well.
Mm-hmm.
They have wombs too, in many instances, and those people are going to be affected by their ability to achieve, you know, autonomy over their own reproductive control. And so, or as I like to say, control over the means of their own reproduction. So yeah, this is a very serious issue. And as I said at the beginning, if your workplace isn't organized, organize it and make sure that getting health care, including reproductive options and gender affirming options, are part of that final contract.
Or as the raging grannies sing, I'll get my tubes tied and you get a vasectomy. I'll get my tubes tied and you get a vasectomy. They do one more time. I'll get my tubes tied and you get a vasectomy. And you stop bothering us.
Damn right. Couldn't have been better said or sung.
We'll try singing vasectomy real fast three times.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess there's a whole lot of men getting vasectomies these days.
Yes, there are. And as a matter of fact, you know, for people who have wombs, it's a lot more difficult to try and get any kind of permanent birth control. Many of them, especially if they're younger women, are often turned away, even when they're absolutely certain that they want to make that decision. And in some cases, younger men are also turned away from being able to get a vasectomy too, because, well, yeah, you're legally an adult, but you're too young. There's a possible liability to the doctor, even though they make you sign a bunch of legal paperwork that says it's not their liability. You know, it's just making sure that people are available to breed, even though those people might not want to ever breed. And I just think that it's...
And it's if we don't have enough people on the planet, and the planet's in such trouble because of our excessive consumption.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, certainly, you know, the population does play a part into it, but I think also the fact that there are so many places, not just in the U.S., but around the world, where, you know, there are population explosions and there aren't systems of support to really kind of provide for those people. And I understand that we talk about overpopulation. Sometimes it can drift into this very hard line, as some people call it, ecofascism of like, we have to breed less, so the lesser people need to die. We're not saying that. What we're saying is that we still do not. Well, I'm saying it facetiously from their perspective, and the fact that, like, even if there were more people on Earth, we still need time in order to develop the systems in order to make sure that they can stay alive. And part of that system should not and will not be forcing people to breed when they do not want to. All children should be wanted. All children should be supported. And, you know, we should just make sure that this right is protected in general. The other thing I wanted to mention here, outside of voting, besides making sure that whoever you do vote for, please make sure that they're pro-choice, because this right really matters, is also the fact that there's more things you can do than voting. As I've said before, you can organize your workplace, you can join a local protest, you can become part of an auntie network, which you can find on social media of people. Mm-hmm. If Roe v. Wade ultimately fails, there are already networks of people that are beginning to form to make sure that if you need to go out of state, we can financially provide for you, we can provide you transportation, we can give you a place somewhere safe where you can rest afterwards. Because in many of these states that are threatening to overturn their abortion laws, they're also including some serious criminal charges, both for people who provide them, but also people who get them.
And trying to leave the state. What kind of a country are we all in?
I know.
Well, and they're starting with this, but next will come denying access to birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how can they have it both ways?
Yeah. So I know Washington right now, our governor has declared that we will be a state that protects Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
But you are cordially invited to get involved in what's known as the Auntie Network, which helps people in other states be able to access safe abortions if they need it,
mm-hmm.
to terminate their pregnancy. There are plenty of organizations where you can donate money or time if you got it. Planned Parenthood is one.
Mm-hmm.
ACLU is another one.
Absolutely.
And I will look up and keep the listeners updated on what other organizations you could give to.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was Lynn.
So yeah, please do whatever is in your power in order to make sure that if you live somewhere, or if you travel to somewhere where that right may not be protected in the future, that there are organizations and systems of support around you, not just at the ballot box, but also in your workplace, with your neighbors, with your friends, with the people that you trust. Because, I mean, this will have long-term devastating consequences, but hopefully if it does, if push comes to shove and it gets really bad, we should be able to survive this.
Well, and let's talk about the myth that the Supreme Court delivers blind justice.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court has never been a non-political entity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know what, if anything, our current president and our current Senate and Congress are going to do about this. But there are some solutions if they would get them done, whether it's ending the filibuster so they can go ahead and vote this through,
mm-hmm.
whether it's executive order. I don't know if that's possible. Whether it's getting more Supreme Court justices. There have been periods in the time in history where we've had less. We've had 5. We've had 11.
Mm-hmm.
9 is not written in blood. So we could unstack the court, because it's stacked right now.
Well, if we were to get a large majority where we could get rid of the filibuster, Congress could change the law.
Right.
Absolutely.
In the meantime, fellow workers, we got to get ourselves on the pavement, on the ground, doing everything we can, because
mm-hmm.
this is a fascistic move, and
absolutely.
We cannot let it roll over us.
Absolutely. Stay safe out there wherever you protest. Organize your workplace so you can get those rights, or at least have them on pen and paper so that they're protected. And, you know, hopefully this will not come to pass. Now, you had something to add about Leonard Peltier?
I did, because when we're talking about injustice and we're talking about non-elected people taking away our rights, there is one individual that we absolutely have to keep in our memories and our minds, and that's Leonard Peltier, who's been in jail for over 40 years, wrongly convicted. And I wanted to let people know that there is an event that's happening at Mukilteo Beach at Point Elliott on Wednesday, June 1st. That will both be on land and on the water at 12:30. The Blue Heron Canoe family and local Kai activists will rally with other members of the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee, who are coming across the country and joining to bring awareness for America's indigenous political prisoner. And we are asking people to contact their elected officials and also to write letters to the Department of Justice asking for clemency. Leonard he's not in good health. He's been there for over 46 years in prison. 46 years. Yeah. And so that's June 1st, 12:30, Mukilteo. And be there. Support this man.
Thank you so much, fellow worker. All right. Thank you so much to both fellow worker Marilyn and fellow worker Lynn. Our next topic, this is something more specifically related to labor organizing. And I think that this is something that no matter what shop that you're in is a very important thing to consider. In the IWW, we've long had this concept, this idea of what is a hot shop. Now, a hot shop is usually described as somewhere where basically when it comes to how long employees stay, it's a revolving door. In my own personal work experience, I've definitely worked in a couple hot shops myself. I've tried to have, you know, agitation conversations with people about, you know, what do you value in the workplace? What do you think really makes you struggle? What would you like to see out of the fruits of your labor, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately, in a lot of these hot shops, it's hard to keep people grounded long enough for something as long as an organizing campaign. And so I wanted to talk a little bit today about maybe what we can do in those kinds of situations to our fellow listeners who might be trying to organize their workplace, how to make sure that people stay motivated enough to change your workplace rather than just change jobs and hop from shop to shop.
What is the Elvis Costello song? Should I stay or should I go?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in one of my previous jobs, I was working in the Port of Tacoma at a manufacturing plant. And I had recently joined the IWW at the time. It was right after I joined in March of 21. And, you know, I was really excited to start work. I hadn't really taken an organizer training. The IWW provides an organizer training called OT101. You can contact a local branch about availability and when they're going to be doing that kind of training. But I hadn't really had this training yet. I had a little bit of an idea of kind of how to start these conversations and who to reach out to in my immediate vicinity. But unfortunately, a lot of the people that I'd reach out to were probably just going to leave in the next 3 months, according to them. You know, I'm just here to make sure I can qualify for unemployment, because we were still knee deep in the pandemic at the time. Some employees kind of had a, you know, this fictional idea of unions of just being a bureaucracy. You know, it's just somebody else to pay my money to. Even if we get a raise, it's just going to go to the union.
Wonder where they got that idea.
The bosses. The bosses gave them that idea. But yeah, I think in my own personal experience, I think one tip for our fellow workers out there would definitely be, I mean, the most important thing in any organizing is to have a closer and deeper relationship with your coworkers around you. I think that in a lot of work environments, especially here in the US, we have these very casual workplace relationships of they're my friend at work, or, you know, they're just my coworker, or their struggles are theirs and my struggles are mine, and there's no way that they overlap.
That's why bowling was invented.
Absolutely.
Take your coworkers bowling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's really, I know that's perfect actually, because that's one good example of,
yeah,
you should be friends with your coworkers. If you're planning on staying somewhere for a long time and you want to motivate others to stay for longer so that they can actually change the work environment as a whole, try just being good friends to them, you know, go hiking with them, go bowling with them.
Start a baseball team.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, try and socialize with your employees outside of work so that you can have those candid conversations that really matter. Because sometimes I think in a lot of workplace environments, there's this culture of surveillance. And this is really why, I mean, even outside of the IWW, any union really suggests you shouldn't be having too many quote unquote dangerous conversations in the workplace, because there might be a security camera watching you. There could be a microphone. There could be the eyes of the boss.
You
want to
hear something creepy?
Mm-hmm.
I worked for a mental health organization, community mental health, and they put in cameras in every hall, in every single hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how mentally healthy is that? And we're supposed to provide mental health services to people when we're in that kind of an unhealthy situation ourselves.
Well, hold on. Were they in the counseling rooms or just the corridors?
Just the corridors. But they wanted to make sure that there was no conversation.
Yeah. No horseplay, so to speak.
Oh, horse. I'm laughing because Noah has a horse.
Yes. I am a very famed equestrian in my Tacoma branch of the IWW.
the only one.
You know, I've actually had that experience as well. I think that definitely meeting outside of the workplace in order to have better relationships with your coworkers is important, because in one of my previous shops that I worked at, the boss did the same thing. When we moved to a new location, he set up cameras at almost every angle except mm-hmm. for the lunchroom.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they don't add cameras in the lunchroom because there's always enough people in the lunchroom that
if you use your computer to send a message. Don't do that. They can track that.
That is very important too. If you're going to be talking to your coworkers about it at all, don't do it at the workplace. Not just a physical conversation, but
go
electronic.
Bowling,
yes.
Please.
Yeah, don't talk about organizing on workplace computers. Don't talk about organizing on workplace Wi-Fi, because some workplaces are more liberal towards this than others, but sometimes they can add software.
Well, my place did.
Mm-hmm. That can track your messages or could potentially...
mentally unhealthy.
Yes.
Spying.
That is freaky.
And I think something else to really help workers make sure that their coworkers stay around for organizing is, you know, I mean, kind of building on this whole being a better friend to your coworkers is try to actively be supportive of them in the workplace. If you can't have conversations related to organizing, at least when they're having a stressful moment at work, I've definitely dealt with coworkers who have dealt with anxiety and depression. And sometimes on break, they just kind of needed a shoulder to lean on. Mm-hmm. That shoulder to lean on, you know. Because a lot of that stress that individuals face kind of come from their work itself, you know, whether it's backbreaking physical labor, whether it's mental labor, you know, anything like that. I think being a good shoulder and being a good confidant for your coworkers can really help them say, you know what, I can stick it out because I have this person that's there with me on shift every day. So, yeah.
And
yeah.
Be culturally sensitive. Mm. Educate yourself.
I mean, that's kind of... And I've talked about this in private, and of course, I'm happy to talk about this on the radio. Pretty much when I graduated college, I did all of these working class jobs that really gave me a realization of, oh, there are lots of different people that have to work in these environments. You know, people who have recently emigrated, people whose immigration status might be questionable in the eyes of the law, people of all different ethnic and religious backgrounds. You're absolutely right. You should be sensitive to the concerns and cares of your coworkers on those grounds as well.
Where I work. Once again, community mental health. Mm-hmm. They wondered why there were so few people of color that worked there. But every time a person of color came in, and they were highly qualified, they ended up leaving shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why.
Yeah, there are definitely workplace environments where there is, you know, it's not de jure racism. Obviously, we don't have, that's very legally enforced, you know, civil rights protections. But there are definitely workplaces where you just feel unsafe or unwanted as, say, mm-hmm. a person of color,
right.
A woman, a member of the LGBT community, et cetera.
Or you just aren't their style.
Right. And of course, especially in more quote unquote liberal workplaces and work environments, a lot of the talk around things like diversity and inclusion usually mean only diversity inclusion at the bottom levels of the workforce. But then once you move up the ranks, you kind of notice, this is a very monochromatic workplace structure, so to speak. That's another very interesting and very apparent form of workplace discrimination as well.
In that word.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So to all of our workers out there, excuse me, My suggestion is this. Be a better friend to your coworker. Try and spend time with them outside of work so that you can have honest conversations without the eyes of the boss on your private messages or on your physical conversations. Always play it safe at work no matter what. And be sensitive to the concerns of your fellow coworkers, whether it's things relating to being a person of color in your particular workplace, how they identify, who they love, you know, what their gender is, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are very important because talking to different groups of individuals make you realize that there are genuinely different concerns based on those lines as well. So as always, solidarity to all of our fellow workers who are trying to organize at this time. And if you need any help organizing or who to organize with, you can always find the IWW at IWW.org. We can provide you plenty of resources on how to navigate these conversations and how to have better relationships with your coworkers.
And we would love to listen to you, and we would love to let you know what we know.
Absolutely. And now, as part of our WOB Radio Hour, we also cover what our main union publication, The Industrial Worker, publishes on their webpage on a regular basis. And one article that we have been asked to review, which we think will be of interest to our listeners, is that the IWW has recently launched a new organizing program to help train workers. And this is an article written by Adam F. Naughton with The Industrial Worker. So to give a brief description, and I will quote the article, the IWW's organizing department board recently launched the Branch Development External Organizer Shadowing Program with the purpose of increasing both the number of union members who can assist in workplace organizing efforts from the outside, also known as external organizers, and the number of local IWW branches capable of supporting campaigns on their own. Aaron Conway Fuchs, that's F-U-C-H-E-S, an IWW member who serves on the organizing department board and helped develop the new shadowing program, describes it as important to getting the union to a place where the majority of members are organizing in their workplaces with a sizable team of external organizers to aid new campaigns. And this is a quote from Aaron. The goal is for even a very small branch without many of their own experienced people to be able to build up their own apparatus to support anyone who reaches out to them. So normally our main worker training program, which as we've mentioned before, is known as Organizer Training 101 and is usually given out by local branches of the IWW, or at least those that are trained to give the class, usually teaches those best practices. However, according to Aaron, he does admit that it isn't always practical to get workers into the multi-day training. And so this is why the IWW is currently pushing to have external organizers as well to aid those who are trying to learn how to better organize their workplaces.
So how long would those trainings be, Noah?
Let me see. I don't think it gave any particular detail on how long those trainings would be. This would be kind of like a supplemental education program to kind of help those who might be outside of workplaces to help those that are trying to organize their workplace.
So
it would
be a pool of experienced trainers that how would somebody know to get in touch with them?
Well, usually you would get in touch with the same way that you normally would, which is reaching out to a branch.
So if they contacted a branch, then say, for instance, we would have a pool of experienced trainers that we could contact and say, hey, this person wants to learn more. Can you do a training? Would it be a one-on-one training? Would they have to get a group? Do we have details yet?
I actually have a perfect excerpt from the article right here that will answer your question.
Oh, good.
And this is another quote. Once an IWW member is chosen by their branch to participate in the program, they will begin sitting in on meetings with workers interested in organizing. After completing the Organizer Training 101 and observing three meetings with the same worker, the participant is considered for the next level of shadowing, referred to as a junior external organizer, where they begin handling meetings with workers alongside a more experienced organizer.
Oh, that's good for the person who's learning.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're not just thrown out there and under the bus.
Yeah. I mean, I've taken OT 101 myself. I think it's a great program, but I think that this will help. Something that I've always believed that the IWW should do, and I think this is going to directly address that, this new program, is that every worker should be an organizer, or at least everybody within the IWW should have some kind of organizing training.
This is so good because you can't see me, but I'm an old fart. And so I am retired, but I still want to be useful. So if I went through the training and the shadowing, because I've got time to spare, and a lot of young people are so caught up in working, they don't have the time to do that. I could, when asked, go into an outfit and teach them how to organize, because I would have training to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So those of us that want to be useful, that are no longer organizing actively in their workplace because we're retired, would be able to go in and still help out.
Yeah, absolutely. And this new program will be open to every IWW union and branch in North America. So this isn't an international program as of yet. However, I imagine that they will probably be updating this program in the future to help out our fellow workers in, say, England or Ireland, where we also have a significant number of other branches as well. So I think this is great. This is kind of along the lines of what I've been talking about, that, you know, every worker and organizer, everybody in the IWW should have some kind of, you know, organizing training. And I think that this will be really helpful to that, because I think that there should be more people who have those tools, no matter what workplace they go to carry it with you. Absolutely.
It could even be kind of risky for the whole effort if someone really doesn't have any training, they're just launched into it.
Oh, yeah.
Just they could kind of...
It could be counterproductive.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can certainly talk for myself. Like I was saying earlier, when I first joined the IWW and I didn't really have any training yet, I was trying to piece together what to do. I was a little bit too overeager. I didn't really know the right questions to ask or how to like really relate with my coworkers. Yeah, absolutely. So you're absolutely right on that, Lan. Hopefully this program will really take off, and I certainly look forward to participating myself. So that is an article from the Industrial Worker talking about the new organizing program.
You know what we haven't mentioned yet in this whole program? And I don't think, well, I think it's important to say it in every single program that's happening that we do right now, which is these are actually very good times for labor organizing.
Absolutely.
There is a shortage of workers. People are leaving the workplace. This is our time.
No, the IWW has seen a great
All labor unions,
but the IWW included, has definitely seen a big, not just interest from the general public, but also even more participation. Membership numbers and organizing programs have jumped through the roof. And so I think this is a great way for the IWW to, you know, keep a leg in the door, so to speak, and make sure that we're getting in on the action and that we're reaching out to workers who want to organize with a union that will genuinely represent their, you know, interests in the workplace.
And you hear the union word said more and more in different contexts.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We have reached the conclusion and general housekeeping section of our radio show. Fellow worker Marilyn, would you like to kick it off?
This is some news for people in the Tacoma area. The Tacoma Labor School has started up. It's a brand new organization based on the principles and the organization of the Highlander School, those of you that may be aware of that. So if you go onto Facebook and write in Tacoma Labor School, it will connect you to the Tacoma Labor School. This is an outfit that wants to educate high school and college people about the history of labor and labor organizations. So Tacoma Labor School, they put on one hell of a good picnic and barbecue a couple of weeks ago. It was very well attended. It was a combination of Tacoma Democratic Socialists, lived experience organization, that's people that have been homeless in the past, Tacoma Labor School, progressive organizations, lots of Bernieites there. They're coming together.
And IWW too.
Yeah, there were several of us there. So exciting stuff, Tacoma Labor School. And I want to do a, if you're listening, Al, I hope you're feeling better. Kristen, I hope you're doing better.
She's been doing pretty good. She recently went in for surgery. I think her chemotherapy has officially ended. And so she's really on the upswing in terms of her health. If you haven't logged in before, or sorry, if you haven't listened in before, fellow worker Kristen up in Seattle helps produce the Seattle Worker, which is a local publication of the Seattle IWW branch. And she has been battling breast cancer for quite some time. And so we, you know, always like love to give her a shout out because she does such important work with keeping our fellow workers informed.
Yeah.
Another bit of housekeeping we would like to address is that we have recently been given the opportunity to not only expand to other local low power FM stations that we've been reaching out to talking about carrying the WOB Radio Hour, but we actually received an offer from KPFT all the way down in Texas to carry our show as well. So hopefully we'll even be expanding to other states here in the near future. We are currently pending approval to broadcast down there, but I think it's a wonderful opportunity for the WOB Radio Hour to reach out to more fellow workers and listeners who want to learn more about ongoing labor organizing and activism, aspects of organizing, and all other issues related to that. So we definitely give a shout out to KPFT down in Texas, and we certainly hope to be broadcasting to those folks soon. And so that kind of wraps up, it seems, our conclusion and general housekeeping. We would just like to give one big shout out to all of our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in. All of these aspects about labor organizing and current events really do impact a lot of working class people, both here in our neighborhood and all around the country. And we wish you solidarity, whether it's, you know, protesting for the right to choose or whether it's trying to organize your own workplace. The IWW will always have your back. Please reach out to a local branch, or you can find the IWW at iww.org if you're interested in organizing your workplace. And as always, solidarity forever.
Yeah, solidarity.
Oh, there's power, there is power in a band of working men. When they stand, hand in hand, that's a power, that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grant. One industrial union.